I'm Brian McCreath at Symphony Hall with Alan Gilbert. Thank you so much, Mr. Gilbert, for a little bit of your time today.
It's a great pleasure.
The program this week begins with En Saga by Sibelius, and then Je by Debussy, concludes with Lila Josefowitz in the Scheherazade Point 2 by John Adams. And your well-known 2015 lecture at the Royal Philharmonic Society had one particular line that said, every piece has to have a place. Every piece of music has to have a particular role to play, I think, if I can paraphrase. How are the pieces arranged in this program in such a way that they all have a role to play?
The kernel of this program, the seed from which this program grew, I think, was Je of Debussy. And it was a very simple reason that I asked to do the piece with this orchestra, and it's that I think the Boston Symphony has an inimitable way with French music and just an exquisite sound and just the right style for that music. So I really wanted to do what I think is maybe Debussy's greatest masterpiece, Je, and perhaps the most difficult, certainly one of the most difficult pieces in the symphonic repertoire, a piece that you really need a magnificent orchestra to play. Je is the story of a tennis match, and the tennis match you have to put in quotation marks because it's about much more than that. And it's in fact not really about the tennis match. It's about the games and the kind of sexual play that's going on around the tennis court. There's a man and two women, just to get right to the point. It's about a threesome that happens, and it has a very clear, explicit, if I may use the word, storyline. There, you know, the guy first is hooking up with one of the women, and then the other one gets jealous and kind of interferes, and then he switches his attentions over to her. The first one feels not so good about that, obviously, and then so she gets back in the picture. In the end, they're all, can I just say, going at it, and it's a very clear. You can see in the music where he puts stage directions at specific places in the score. You can actually hear the connection with the action in the music, but you also don't need to know anything about the story necessarily. It happens to be a very clear story that he's telling, but it's also just a very sophisticated, pure piece of music that has a lot of color and a lot of rhythmic drive and a lot of flair and a lot of kind of curves and twists and turns. It's an amazing piece of music. But since that was the kernel of the program, I just kept going in the vein of storytelling. And En Saga by Sibelius, En Saga is Swedish for a saga, a story, a tale. And even though the narrative is not so clearly stated, it's not, maybe in his mind it might have been clear what the story was about, but it feels like a story that we don't know what the words are. You can picture the elder in a community holding forth, telling the story to maybe the grandchildren around the fire or whatever, and it's so compelling. It feels so important. It feels as if something about the essence of this community is being imparted. It's a very simple piece of music in a way. It's got kind of figurations that back up the melody, which represents the story. And that story is repeated and has different guises, different characters, essentially the same tune, but sometimes faster, sometimes slower, sometimes more imploring, sometimes defiant, passionate. About two-thirds of the way through the piece, it kind of peters out and almost dies, and you think maybe it will never come back to life, but the ember is still glowing, and before you know it, it explodes into the sort of apotheosis of the piece, and it's unbelievably extroverted and exciting and really whips up into a kind of frenzy. An amazing piece, and then ends with a kind of reflective, peaceful close with one of the great clarinet solos in all of music, in my opinion. John Adams wrote Scheherazade 2 for Lila. We did the premiere a few years ago in New York, and it is his take on the Scheherazade story, which, to remind people, is about this despotic leader who would habitually and systematically kill his wives after one night of being married to them. Scheherazade was such a compelling storyteller that she was able to string out a tale over days and days and days, 1001 nights, and he never killed her because he always wanted to know what was going on. And so it's a kind of metaphor for art and life and how literature becomes life or supports life or makes life possible. There are a lot of levels on which to understand this music, but it's at heart a misogynistic story, maybe appropriate and kind of apropos in this Me Too era. And it's nice to have the story told from Scheherazade's perspective. Scheherazade is the protagonist. Again, the story, there are words that John writes in the score to give us some hints, but it's not so clear what exactly the story is. It's more atmospheric and somehow presents, in a very compelling musical way, Scheherazade as not only the protagonist but as the hero of the story. She's a hero in a kind of subjugated way in the original. This turns it around and empowers her, and it really is one of John's great pieces. I mean, there's so many. I love the music he's been writing recently, and even though there are hints of the more minimalist antecedents in his music, it's totally through composed. It's melodic, it's atmospheric, it's beautiful, and it's an amazing work. And I think the program finally works well together. I tried to create a context in which storytelling is the subject, but looked at in three very different ways.
That's fantastic, and I think about other pieces by Adams and Scheherazade too, kind of stands out. It's a little bit different. It's not like a lot of his other pieces. But, your time at the New York Philharmonic has come to an end as the music director there, and you're going to be the music director at the Elbphilharmonie. And I'm curious, especially after reading your 2015 lecture, your ideas about the role of an orchestra in a modern society. What does the Elbphilharmonie promise as opportunity that attracted you to take that position?
The Elbphilharmonie, for those listeners who are not familiar, is a new hall that was built in the harbor of Hamburg. And architecturally, it's stunning. And when it opened last January, a little over a year ago, it became an instant civic icon. It's an amazing building to look at. It's built on top of an old warehouse in the harbor, this monolithic brick building of maybe six or seven stories, and they built this glass edifice on top, growing out of the brick base, that looks a little bit like clouds or water itself or a ship. It's got these kind of billowy shapes on top, which are make you think of sails of ships or something. A little bit in the way that the Sydney Opera House is such a clear symbol of the city, I think it's fair to say that the Elbphilharmonie has already become a kind of symbol for Hamburg. It was a controversial project because it took a long time. It was very over budget. It was wildly expensive, and there were years in which the construction was literally stopped because of conflicts about funding and the contractors and different issues that were coming up. But all that's really forgotten now. The music is the thing. The hall is a real temple of music now. And the orchestra, it used to be the NDR Symphony Orchestra. It's now called the NDR Elbphilharmonie Orchestra. They took the name of the hall, which there's a wonderful tradition of that. The Gewandhaus Orchestra, which is such an important orchestra now for the Boston Symphony, is named after its original building. The Concertgebouw Orchestra is named after the hall there. I think since this is such a special building, it's an exciting move to call the orchestra the Elbphilharmonie Orchestra. And frankly, I was not looking for a new position. You know, after you've been music director of the New York Philharmonic for 8 years, a break is maybe not inappropriate. And I loved the job, and it was eight of the greatest years of my life. And I still love the orchestra, and I look forward to going back many times. But the job of music director at an American orchestra is really all consuming. It's not exactly 24/7, but there was literally never one day that went by in which I was able to go without dealing with this or that question or issue that had to do with the orchestra. I'm interested in how orchestras interact with the communities that they serve. And now in Hamburg, which is an orchestra that I have a long relationship with, I first conducted them back in 2001, in fact, and I was principal guest conductor there for quite a few years. There's an orchestra that, in a very obvious way, is kind of a symbol of the city. And because of the popularity and the notoriety of the hall, many things are possible now. This is a phenomenon that won't last forever, obviously, but right now, you can literally program just about anything, and the hall sells out. Every single event at the hall is sold out. This won't last, but the momentum that is in motion now is so exciting that we're reaching new audiences every day. Sometimes people come, it's not for the wrong reason, but they show up. Not necessarily for the music. They just want to see the inside of the hall. I've heard that there are some performances in which some audience members leave at the intermission because I guess they've gotten what they were looking for. They heard something in the hall and that was enough. But we have an opportunity to not only attract new audiences, but hopefully build connections with people who maybe were not previously regular concert goers. I think music can be so wonderful in people's lives, and the way the world is today, maybe even more than ever, we have to hold up art as kind of our, not only our solace, but as a kind of beacon of hope for humanity. There's an appetite. The management team, the orchestra itself, is so open to interesting ideas and fresh ways of thinking about programming and interacting with the audience. Obviously, as a base, we have the Elbphilharmonie, but we're also talking about expanding our reach. Putting out tentacles into the city. Physically out. Around the city, in different places. In short, all the ingredients that I think are essential for a 21st century orchestra are in place. Now it just remains to do the work and see what we can accomplish. I love the musicians, and I love their sense of kind of experimentation and willingness to try new things. And partly because of the hall, I think implicitly this sense of adventure and shared exploration is very much in the fabric of the city. So it was an offer that I couldn't say no to.
Fantastic. Alan Gilbert, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to speak with you.